This is the GameStreet.biz microcast for Monday the 29th of April 2024, recorded on Friday the 26th of April 2024. I am James Batchelor, Editor-in-Chief of GameStreet.biz. I am joined, as always, by Head of GameStreet.biz, Chris String. How are you, sir?
I'm doing wonderful, James. I'm going to wave as well to our viewers on
Good.
YouTube.
Do the wave. Just a reminder that this is available in video. I always mock you. It's part of the job. Joined by a special guest this week, founder and editor of MobileGamer.biz, Neil Long. Thank you for joining us, sir.
Hello. How's it going?
Good.
It's good. I understand you two actually met last night.
We were at the UK. There's an indie sort of game developer event, a showcase event called. WASD, whatever you want to call it. I went to the industry party. Neil and I were knocking it back, having it. Neil, we don't drink, but we were having a nice. And I actually say it was really nice the amount of people that came up to me and said, "Oh, listen to your podcast," and not to moan about the sound quality, but to tell us that, you know, they were genuine fans. Communications legend Emily Britt apparently finds it relaxing. So I'm glad. I took that as a compliment. I think it's a compliment.
That's a compliment. She said relaxing, not sedating. So yeah, that as a compliment.
Yeah, she doesn't listen to it go to sleep. But it was it was lovely. Lots of people came up to almost as many people talked about the podcast as they talked about your interview with Lars from Embracer this week.
Ah, thank you. Yes, that was going to be the one of the first stories we talked about this week. So we're going to be diving into the biggest stories of the week, and the first one, is Lars Wingefors and Embracer. They announced Monday morning, just before trading opened, that Embracer is going to be splitting into three separate companies, each of which is going to be independently publicly listed on Nasdaq Stockholm. So it's going to be Asmodee Group, so the tabletop publisher and all that kind of side of the business is going to be one company. You've then got Coffee Stain and Friends. Now, these are not the final names. Coffee Stain and Friends is basically like everything that's from indie to AA, and then include. Also, definitely getting your thoughts on this, Neil. Like, and then all their free to play is kind of the everything else kind of business is going under Coffee Stain and Friends. So that's going to include like THQ Nordic, Easy Brain, Decca. Trying to find the actual thing. Amplifier Gaming Invest, Ghost Ship, Tarsier, Tuxedo Labs. And then the third company is Middle Earth Enterprises and Friends. And this is the one that's basically Embracer Group, as it is publicly listed now, is going to become whatever Middle Earth Enterprises and Friends becomes named. And that is the AAA powerhouse. So that is Crystal Dynamics, Dan Buster Studio, Eidos Montreal, PlayOn, Warhorse, Dark Horse Comics and Freemo. There's some non-gaming business in there. I presume the weird Viking clothing range is in that company, perhaps. I was lucky enough that I managed to get to speak to Wingefors, the CEO of Embracer, very shortly after the announcement. And interesting stuff. Like, I mean, I can't even begin to kind of summarize what's going on in this microcast, particularly if we've got other topics to talk about. Chris, I'll pass to you first. I'm kind of intrigued as to your. I mean, I think I've talked about my take kind of behind the scenes as to why they're doing this, etc. But I was intrigued to get your reaction. Like, what do you think of like this as the future of Embracer?
Well, I think that's the key bit, is the future. Like, a lot of we've done a lot of dissecting. A lot of people have done a lot of dissecting of all the things that Embracer have done wrong, and how we got to this point. And you know what, that we should always keep doing that. I think it's a cautionary tale it's a thing. I read your interview with Lars, and I've interviewed Lars a bunch of times in the past, and I've always, he's one of those execs I'm actually quite like, because I remember when he acquired Destroy All Humans IP, and I was interested as to why they wanted to do that, and it became quite apparent it's because he likes Destroy All Humans, right? There was no sort of business thinking behind that acquisition. He just likes games, and that I find him quite likeable as that reason. But you know, I still don't entirely, I read in the interview, I wasn't entirely convinced he's quite hit home what he's done in the first to get us to this point. But I don't really want to spend too much time sort of just with this. It's everywhere, like what Embracer did wrong and what Lars done wrong and what the decisions wrong. In terms of what is this set up for the future, And I'm not as close to it as you are, James. You've been covering this, like, this has been your beat. But the my take on it is, I think put the debt that the company have on Asmodee Group. Is that got that said that right? Yeah. And that makes sense to me because that does seem the most stable of the three. I'm quite excited. Obviously, it's the AAA group, whatever, the Middle Earth and Friends. It sounds like a Garfield comic. I think that's quite exciting. But the thing is with that, I'm really worried about anything that requires that much investment. Because I've got the Tomb Raider IP in that. Mm. And Tomb Raider is a very popular brand, but it's not as lucrative as people think it is. I remember when it came out of how much they'd spent on it and everyone thought they'd got a bargain. But I actually don't think they did. I think it's probably what it was worth, and they've just overspent in previous acquisitions. It's just an IP that you cost a lot. You know, it's an action adventure franchise. It's going up against really big games like Star Wars and Uncharted and all those sort of things. To sort of compete in that genre, you need to spend a lot of money, and not the most lucrative. It's a successful brand, but it's not a hugely lucrative one. And then you look at Middle Earth, which don't get much bigger than the Lord of the Rings IP, but you know, it's competing in a space where, you know, Game of Thrones exists and Baldur's Gate and all the. I know it's not just games. And that the cost of making a really good high fantasy stuff in any medium is also super high. So there's a lot of pressure on that group. I understand not putting any debt on them to try and deliver that stuff. And then, but the third one's the bit that's a bit like, and the rest, right?
Yeah, it's
all the other shit we could work out where to stick. it feels like the first two seems to make strategic sense, but that one's a bit.
It goes to show, like, just how much Embracer bought. Like, and so the split into three, like, makes sense to me in terms of... So prior to this split, Embracer had, I think it was 12 operating groups. And they sold two of them, Saber and Gearbox. They sold two of them. And then this is condensing the 12 operating groups into three, essentially, and three separate companies that are focused entirely on what they're doing. But... you still have that really weird variety of things. Like I said, I did a piece a while back. I took over Brendan's This Week in Business column, and I listed all the businesses they've got. And like I say, it goes from, you know, the Lord of the Rings estate and AAA publishers right down to, like I say, Viking clothing and like indie, you know, boxed indie publishers and, you know, weird, like our PR agency. Like, there's just such a weird variety. And most of that variety is now within Coffee Stain and Friends, or whatever that becomes named. Mm. That is a weird one to kind of like bundle in. The fact they've bundled mobile into there as well. So I'm going to bring you in, Neil. Like, the mobile companies they've got there within Coffee Stain and Friends are Easy Brain, Deca, I think it's Crazy Labs as well. Like, those are the big three. A lot of those have kind of, I understand, fairly popular games, like quite broad games like, you know, Blockudoku, Sudoku.com, Jigsaw Puzzle, like things like those. From a perspective, like, what's your take on this?
Yeah, I haven't really published a great deal about Embracer on MobileGamer.biz because, you know, you guys are doing a great job. I don't really have anything to add. Mobile is not a huge part of what Embracer's been doing. I think the sort of mobile angle on this is, if you look at other roll-up companies who have been doing this, actually primarily in mobile, there's a company called MTG, which bought Hutch and which bought, I think, Inno Games. They've been sort of slowly accumulating mobile studios to build this sort of MTG group. There's a company called Stillfront, which has been doing similar stuff, buying smaller mobile studios, rolling them all up into one company. But I guess the difference is Embracer went too hard, too fast, and Stillfront and MTG have been sort of steadily accumulating things over years and not overstretching themselves. So yeah, the Embracer story, like you said at the start there, is a bit of a cautionary tale. Don't go too hard, too fast. They're almost like the Liz Truss of the video games industry. I don't know if anyone's come up with that analogy before, but I guess it was all based on that Saudi money that Lars had been banking on. As soon as that goes away, it all falls apart. And yeah, it's a shame. But yes, I think the lesson to be learned is go slower, more carefully, and, you know, don't go fully mad in the way Embrace the season.
They had this idea, didn't they? If they had loads and loads of those games companies, it spreads the risk, so that if you're an investor worried about the high risk nature of the games industry, it's felt like a safer bet. But that risk required lots of acquisitions. It required an awful lot of needed the industry to keep growing, and it needed the markets to be strong. And it's a weird thing. Is like we always questioned it even back in the day. But the fact they went into debt the month before Russia invaded Ukraine, that was the thing when it was like, oh, and that's when the problem happened. And then people started questioning it. I think they overspent. I mean, we could spend all day talking about all the things Embracer did wrong. I think they need a hit. I think we need to start talking about Embracer as a games company, or whatever they're going to be called, as rather than this sort of weird collection of, you know, just. And they've got some interesting deals. I think Middle Earth Enterprise Friends obviously have a great relationship with Amazon. I think that's interesting, and there's some potential there. But I think it feels a little THQ to me, particularly the Coffee Stain and Friends. It feels a little bit like it's a lot of okay stuff that does okay. I'm worried about that.
It's a lot of success you can't quite repeat. So I was initially surprised that they named that and the rest group Coffee Stain and Friends rather than THQ Nordic and Friends, because THQ Nordic is the progenitor of Embracer. It was originally THQ Nordic. It then became Embracer Group when it was acquiring so many things. But looking back, actually, like, Coffee Stain have had some quiet hits, like Valheim was a really big hit. Like, you know, that just came out of nowhere. Goat Simulator 3 apparently did quite well. You've got things like, I think it's Deep Rock. Deep Rock there. So let's have a quick look at the things that they've got. Deep Rock Galactic is one of those. Satisfactory Wreckfest. Like, these are all like games that have done relatively well and combined perhaps do, you know, decent numbers. But, you know, you look at the AAA space, you know, the AAA one, you know, Middle Earth and Friends, like, the only one I can think of that's come out really well is Metro Exodus did pretty damn well.
Dead Island 2 did well.
But relatively.
Dead
Island 2. Dead Island 2 did great, and that's in that group there. Saints Row didn't do great, but, I mean, Volition are gone. Like, I don't know if they'll bring back the Saints Row franchise. Like, so there are some, but, again, it's like you said, like, there's... It's not like it's a company that's produced nothing but failures, but it hasn't produced enough big hits.
Yeah, I think particularly the Middle-Earth and Friends has a high risk element to it, but they have strong IP, so you'd think they've got it. They've got some great developers, and so that's kind of like, well, good luck. You know, I hope it works, but it's not easy. You know, you're competing in art, fantasy and action adventure, the two. One of the most you're competing with Elden Ring and Baldur's Gate and Star Wars. You've got to fight hard. They've got the talent to do it, though. I will say that, and hopefully companies will work. You know, we're on a podcast here with one of our competitors at Mobile Game, but obviously, but it's like, I think we're seeing Embracer working, or whatever the names of the companies are, a lot more with other people in the industry. We're starting to see, saw that anyway with things like Amazon and stuff. And there's so I wonder if I'm hoping that we can. I suspect that we'll always be talking about all the things they got wrong, but I think the conversation will start moving now towards, you know, are they set up right for the future? Are they going to have a success? Let's look at them as an actual games company rather than an acquisition farm. You know, I hope it works, because there's a lot of wonderful people there.
I think my last thought is, like, I'm intrigued. I think the way forward for them is to just operate as three companies. Like, everyone's always talked about Embracer as just one big company, and it's not. It's a group of... It was a holding company. It was a holding company. It was a group of so many different companies that were very kind of decentralized structure. They were all operating. So it was a ridiculous number of companies. Now I think if they actually get a bit more focused, if each of the three groups becomes a bit more focused, has a strategy that works for each of the three, then yes, potentially there's room there. And you've got Lars kind of sitting kind of behind the scenes, almost. Like, he told us that he's essentially setting up a new holding company that will allow him to own all three. But in my conversation with him, he kept on putting the emphasis on the fact that, no, each one is going to have its own leadership team. They're going to create, you know, direct their strategy. So I think the focus goes on those leadership teams. Like they're dropping the Embracer name. Like whatever Lars's new holding company is not going to be called Embracer. I did ask if that's because Embracer's not become not the most there's not the most positive connotations with that name at the moment. He said no, it's all strategic decisions.
Embracing it, they're just sort of pushing away. It doesn't quite work. Yeah,
they're just existing now, not embracing. Yeah.
Exactly. Yes.
Can I ask James?
Yeah.
Did you get a vibe from Lars about whether splitting the companies into three would make another sale to like your Savvy Games group easier? Was it the scale of Embracer that put the Saudis off, and now that it's split into three, it makes it easier to sell? Because there was I don't know if you guys saw it, there was a Bloomberg report last week from Savvy saying that after they bought Scopely, they're looking to acquire more. And I wondered if, just joining the dots, I wondered if a move to maybe sell off.
We got a press release. Like we don't tend to run unrelated comments in stories like this, but we got a press release, like alongside all the announcements of all Embracer stuff, we got a press release from Savvy saying, "Oh, we welcome this change." It's like, why?
Well, they are one of the investors. They are they are one of the investors. Yeah, absolutely. In the first place, like they are. They just didn't give them more after.
Okay.
So it was that was the
thing. I didn't get a vibe that he's planning on selling any of these.
But it
three
might
companies.
Make it easier to sell them. I think if that's a because they it are might floating, make it easier, right? Yeah. So I think it's just
It's a clearer proposition now, isn't it? If you're like you can describe the three components more easily than Embracer, which was this big amorphous.
If you're Amazon, for instance, and you want some AAA content in your on your Luna platform and via Prime. You might go, I actually just want Middle Earth and Friends, and you can sit there and see that.
Yeah.
You can see that sort of deal happening. Yeah, I think that's a potential. It is. I think they always probably could have broken them up anyway. The because they were trying to sell everything individually. They were when they were going through the sale process. But it's interesting because I had a call with a former games executive the other day, and he came back from the Leap conference in Riyadh in Saudi Arabia. He was talking about how they're basically the whole of Saudi Arabia pumping $200 billion into trying to grow a games industry because their oil industry is going to go away at some point, and they see games as a big thing. And I was into we're talking about the sort of myth of globalization and about how hard it's going to be for them to convince certain companies. When even at the Leap conference, if you flew into that conference, the conference is 2.5 hours away from the airport, and if you're a woman who flew in for that, you're going to have to wait for a man to be able to get a taxi because they won't take people. They won't let you travel on your own. And
really?
So it was. So she had to wait for, and then she got in the taxi with the person I spoke to get there because they wouldn't take her otherwise. And you sit there and you think, these are all the things that it makes me think of the TikTok news this week as well, which is like situation where. There's a lot of people that want to get into games, investing in games from certain countries and certain areas. Completely different scenarios here, but there's real sort of cultural or political obstacles that is making that investment hard. And I'm not entirely sure what point I'm making, but I guess I wanted to bring up TikTok.
let's move on to TikTok, because we could easily talk about Embracer for ages, and we're probably going to come back to Embracer in the next few weeks. This is not over. So TikTok, a bill was signed in the US. President Biden actually signed the bill. That my understanding of like the oversimplification of this is that ByteDance has 270 days to sell off TikTok to another bidder, or it gets banned in the US due to concerns that because the Chinese government still own part of ByteDance, I believe, like there's concerns that the Chinese government can use TikTok to pull user data. There's a lot of kind of concern around this. I actually saw an article on Time this morning about like listing all the countries where if TikTok is not banned completely, it is banned, like government officials are not allowed to have TikTok on government devices or even their personal devices. Like, there's a real concern around this. And the impact on the game space, though, like, I mean, it's quite a kind of broad, not necessarily a game-specific story, but, games, it's become quite an important platform for games, both in terms of marketing, but then obviously like content creators and so forth. I guess, Neil, does this kind of is this something you cover much with TikTok and mobile games?
Yeah, TikTok's actually been a huge, it's not sort of come to the rescue in terms of the discoverability, but you know, the Apple's IDFA changes and all the your reduced ability to track players in mobile as a result of Apple's privacy laws or policies, TikTok sort of arrived at the same point that happened. So a lot of mobile games industry marketers started targeting players through TikTok because their algorithm is so good. So actually, yeah, I think there's actually a ton of discovery and marketing dollars going into TikTok. I don't know if you're an addict of TikTok in the same way that I am, but the algorithm really is frighteningly good. Like I get targeted with, you know, targeted is a sort of sinister word, but I get served by the algorithm, you know, music that I listened to 15 years ago. And it's like obscure music that I listened to 15 years ago. It's incredible how like precisely nailed it has my tastes. So, you know, I get served mobile game ads all the time. And a lot of influencers are getting, are doing very well out of mobile games firms moving a lot, some of their user acquisition budget from the established sort of app loving Unity kind of user acquisition tools to TikTok. And actually, yeah, TikTok have invested quite a lot in the industry. They've sponsored some big stuff at Gamescom. They sponsored EGX.
We did a webinar with them just last week about mobile gaming.
Yeah.
Which is about their talking about the trends and stuff they've spotted in mobile gaming from there and how you in that and literally talking about things you're just talking about as well. You can watch that on our YouTube channel. Sorry, carry on.
Good job. It's actually really important in mobile. So any disruption to that is bad. I think it's quite. I mean, I don't think on the user level it will really result in much disruption. It's kind of just like a back end. You know, America wants to collect the data rather than China. That's effectively the issue here, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like Google is collecting every single piece of information you are putting onto the internet. That's an American company, so that's okay. Because TikTok is doing it, that is not okay. So that's to the kind of protectionism that you get with US government policy. And that's fine. Because it's become such an important discoverability and marketing tool for mobile game developers, I hope there's not too much disruption.
I think it's a matter. I suspect my theory on this, I know it's quite different what the ban is, but because when you see like regulators break up businesses because they're too big or whatever, a lot of the time it's just the management end up taking over the business as an independent entity. And so I can even see it not necessarily being noticeable. My thing for it is, and Brendan talks about this in his This Week in Business article that he published on GI, which on Friday, and you can read it now. He talked about the fact that half the games industry is owned by China, and it was so. And Fortnite is heavily owned by Tencent, and you know, talking massive games. League of Legends is, you know, and you start getting into smaller companies as well. You know, even Sumo was being looked into because of their Chinese ownership, right? Because I don't know, Snake Pass is somehow having a big impact upon privacy, and it's you think. If it goes beyond TikTok and everyone starts looking, because either Fortnite has an audience, a considerable audience, and has a considerable amount of data and on, you know, US players, and you know it's owned by a company which there's a potential here if it could go further, and when it goes further, that impact upon the games industry is what I was getting at with the sort of the globalization issue, in that, you know, the games industry has been very much benefiting from Chinese investment, global Chinese investment, and this situation sort of suggests a pushback against that from the US, and the impact that could have beyond TikTok is is of a concern. You know, you wouldn't believe that the US government would start, you know, cracking down on Fortnite, but maybe.
Who knows? Mm. Yeah.
Mm.
Well,
I don't really have much to add to this.
It's one of those things that, have you seen the, ironically on TikTok, the congressman quizzing the CEO guy, and they're making out that he's like some sinister sort of Chinese spy, when he's just a CEO of a tech company. It's just like,
yeah,
the line of questioning is so offensive.
There's a xenophobic.
I think U.S. policy. Yeah, yeah. The U.S. policy is quite extreme, I think. And yeah, I don't know. American politics is kind of its own world.
Before we dive any further into American politics, I am gonna segue us rather quickly to our final topic, because I'm really conscious of the time. We have gone far beyond microcast on this already, but it's been brilliant talking to you, Neil. So, but there is one more thing we want to talk about, which GI, we don't tend to cover many stories in terms of game announcements, game releases like that. We tend to focus more on the business rather than the products themselves. But there was an interesting game announcement this week. Can you tell us why Squad Busters by Supercell is of interest?
Yes. So sorry for the microcast now. Megacast, yeah. I guess, if we're overrunning. But yeah, I'm on to talk about Supercell and Squad Busters. So... this is a really big deal for mobile. Supercell famously don't release many games. They kill a lot of them. I think there's been 4, possibly even 5 soft launches in between now and their last global launch, Brawl Stars, which was in December 2018. Wow. So it's a long time since a new game has come out. They've been, Squad Busters is a sort of mashup of all of their IP. So it's Heyday, Boom Beach, Clash of Clans, and Brawl Stars. All of those sort of game universes combined. You build your squad, you go around battling. It's got that sort of Supercell cartoony charm to it. So they announced it. There was a limited beta early 2023. And then they announced the soft launch a couple of weeks ago, which went live on Tuesday. And then... you know, it's been a fun week for me. I did an article about using various industry analysts and observers on their thoughts on the soft launch and whether it will go global. And then the very next day, it got announced that it is indeed going global on May 29th. So very short soft launch. Some Supercell games have been in soft launch for 2 years. They had a game called Clash Mini, which was... you know, in testing, it made millions of dollars, even in soft launch. But they were constantly sort of improving it and iterating it in the background in a limited number of markets. But yeah, Squad Busters, unusual, very short soft launch, global on May 29th. The culture at Supercell is an interesting one. You know, I mentioned before about them sort of killing projects, and they say publicly that is on the games teams. If they don't feel like it's going to be a forever game that people will play for 10 years in the same way that people are still playing Clash of Clans and Heyday, then they will kill it. So that means a lot of like very, very good games that most other companies would love to publish fall by the wayside. So yeah, this is a big moment for mobile. Other than, you know, Monopoly Go last year, it's been pretty rough in mobile. People have struggled to, you know, the user acquisition stuff that I was talking about, the privacy policies from Apple and increasingly Google means that you can't, it's harder to get the game, your game in front of the exact customers you want to get it in front of. So yeah, this is a big one for mobile, and roll on May 29th. They've also, interestingly, have just sort of turned around Brawl Stars, which was struggling sort of last summertime. They effectively rebooted the whole sort of monetization and meta of that game. And now it, from June to now, I think revenue is up 8.8 times. Wow. So they've gone, like, I think March, well, I did a story this week on your favourite mobile games industry website, mobilegamer.biz, about it had its biggest day ever, Brawl Stars. I think it made 2.7 million in one day. And it made 2.5 million, you know, either side of that. So it's really on a roll. Supercell have been, you know, not released a new game for 6 years. Revenue's been declining. So this is the sort of big turnaround moment for the company. And Supercell, a lot, kind of like Nintendo, kind of like, you know, I said to you, Dringo, sorry, Christopher Dring, over email this morning, this is kind of like mobile's GTA. Everyone looks to Supercell for like how much polish goes into their games, how they monetize, how they position their games. So it's really big.
Outside of the industry, obviously in the industry we all look to Supercell, but outside of it, when it comes to gamers, are they even like in gamers under get Rockstar and get GTA, right? But is there people? Are there Supercell fans going, oh, we'll wait for the next Supercell game? Is that there is?
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah. I think there's. You know, there's mobile is sort of underreported in lots of different ways, but there are huge communities of people out there who, you know, play all five Supercell games. Like they switch between them, you know, as soon as something goes into soft launch, you know, this is Supercell are making like very slick marketing videos about a game going into soft launch, which is, you know, not something that regular companies do. So yeah, they do have a sort of dedicated fan base. They have quite a large operation of influencers that they work with as well, which obviously helps kind of hold that community together. So yeah, it's going to be a really big launch. They basically won't launch a game unless it's going to earn like $1 billion in its first year. So given the amount mobile has changed in the last 5 years since Brawl Stars arrived, this is it's a big moment for mobile, and looking forward to hopefully speaking to Supercell about the game a little bit more as we sort of roll into launch.
It's so typical of the game of games industry. James and I have been spending most of this year on this podcast talking about, there's no big games this year. There's no big, where are the big games? And obviously we're talking specifically console and PC, but here's one.
We've got Zenless Zone Zero as well, the new HoYo Genshin Impact. That has gone into pre-order this week as well. So that will be a really big mobile game as well. Honkai Star Rail came out about the same time as Monopoly Go last year, and was huge, absolutely huge. And it overtook Genshin Impact in terms of mobile revenue for a few months last year. So. There's a lot of big games coming out in mobile.
America doesn't cancel those ones.
Yeah.
I mean, going back to that, I've just remembered that obviously, like even Supercell is, you know, funded by Tencent. You know, again, we go back to like China ownership, China investment. I think it's like more than 50% of Supercell is owned by Tencent. Mm-hmm. Like it's inescapable. I'm intrigued to see how this one does, because like we do a year in numbers infographic at the end of the year, and I usually, you know, gather data. I think I use Sensor Tower to get this, but like kind of the top games by revenue, by downloads, etc. And by and large, like they're the same games. Whereas in the PC console space, like, it'd be different games every year, albeit the latest version of that annual release, or, you know.
I think James, if you look at the revenue chart rather than unit charts for the best-selling game, I think you might find that it's still Fortnite and Minecraft and the actual, even in the console.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, if we could track that, true. But my point is, mobile. It's always the same games every year that are in the top five, top ten, and like so. Mm. You know, companies like Supercell not only competing with, you know, all the rivals who are trying to take a piece of piece of the pie, but also like themselves. They're trying to. It must be really difficult launching a game like this and launching a big one without cannibalizing your previous, you know, your ongoing successes.
That's actually exactly what happened with Honkai Star Rail last year when that arrived, and then miHoYo were marketing that Honkai Star Rail very heavily to its Genshin Impact player base, And you can see that in the graphs, like Genshin Impact declines, Honkai Star Rail overtakes it, and they've sort of rebalanced it now, where they basically just cannibalized their own game. So Zenless Zone Zero being a sort of a more sci-fi take on their open world kind of gacha adventure template that will hopefully avoid some of that. But yeah, like you say, I mean, Brawl Stars having such a huge comeback and then them launching another game a month later is they need to be careful not to. I mean, there's only so much mobile game revenue to go around.
Time.
Time and things. Maybe
there's a time as well. Yeah,
exactly.
There's only so much revenue. There's only so much playtime. And yeah, it's so fierce.
Maybe this is why, Neil, they spend so long. They kill so many games. If it's a if it's only got a detrimental impact upon their revenue of another title, then it's not worth it, is it?
Yeah, I think each game that's come along from Supercell has been a big kind of innovation in some way. You know, Clash of Clans basically sort of perfected that kind of builder battler mechanic. Heyday was, you know, basically Farmville has sort of perfected that kind of game. Clash Royale is a brilliant sort of card slash tower defense kind of battler. Brawl Stars is like your arena shooter on mobile. They're all kind of quite different. But like their formula, a lot like Nintendo, is to take very well established, quite deep gameplay mechanics and make them, simplify them, so sort of, and sort of distill them to work on mobile to an incredibly broad audience. So, yeah, Squad Busters is like a little like Brawl Stars, but also kind of like those crowd kind of merge games that you might have seen. I can't remember the, is it snake.aio? You know, those kind of, you're basically roaming around and your stats upgrade and you kind of, you battle and then absorb effectively rival gangs. So it's kind of a mix of that. So it's not like super different from Brawl Stars, but yeah, fascinating, and the whole IP mashup element of it is super interesting too. So
I mean, that alone is a testament to Supercell's success. That like is basically building a new IP out of all of its previous IP. Like it's reached that stage. You keep on comparing it to Nintendo. It's reached the stage where it can essentially create its own Smash Brothers. Yeah. Like that's impressive.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's effectively what they're going for. Whether it will, you know. I don't know if they've got enough characters to keep going in the same way that Nintendo kind of maybe over time, because these games are designed to run for 10 years, so they're going to have to keep, they may well bring in other games from, you know, the granny from Merge Mansion. I don't know if you're familiar with that game.
I wouldn't be surprised if there's a lot of kind of IP collaborations. I mean, like, it works with things like Fortnite.
Yeah.
It's designed
for that. So that your new battle pass, your new season, they'll be, you know, in the same way that, like, you know, Neymar turns up in Call of Duty, you'll have quite random celebrities probably turn up in Squad Busters at some point.
They ran out of Nintendo characters eventually.
Yeah, exactly. Characters.
It sounds more like Heroes of the Storm.
Characters from other games.
Blizzard.
What's that? What's Heroes of the Storm?
It's a mashup game where they brought in characters from.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it? Right. There's actually a lot of shared DNA with Blizzard and Supercell. I think they actually have some. This may not be 100% correct, but I think they have some Blizzard guys in the US making a game right now, Supercell. I think that there's a little bit of crossover there in terms of sort of production values and sort of overall kind of game development philosophy.
Yeah.
I think we've probably gone over time.
Yes.
So we have definitely gone over time. I think we should probably. We probably could. Like, I mean, Neil,
sorry.
We could quite happily talk to you like for another hour, but unfortunately, we do need to keep this relatively digestible for our listeners and viewers. So I think we're going to wrap up there. Neil, thank you so much for joining us. Really do appreciate your time today.
Oh, thank you. I'm a fan of this podcast too. So this is
also one of the.
a dream come true.
One of the fans of the podcast at WAS last week actually said that he wished it was longer. So here we go. This is my gift.
There you go.
Listen to the
to that one person. This is dedicated to that one person. You're welcome.
Michael French at Games London did say that it was too long. So I, you know, it swings around. About. Okay.
Well, apologies.
You can't please everyone.
You can't. Hopefully, we need to be somewhere in the middle between the Michael length and the fans' desired length. Yeah. Neil, where can our listeners and viewers find more of your work?
Yes, mobilegamer.biz. Follow me also on LinkedIn. That is a very important channel for me as a B2B journalist. But yeah, mobilegamer.biz on all the things.
Marvellous. You can find more of our work at gamesindustry.biz. We're going to be back next Monday with the next microcast. And in the meantime, be sure to sign up to the GI Daily. That's our daily newsletter. It gives you a complete breakdown of the biggest stories from the past 24 hours. That can be found, or you can sign up, sorry, at gamesindustry.biz/newsletters, or there'll be a link at the end of this video, and it's like a little box at the end of it. There is no escaping our newsletter. If you haven't signed up already, you have no excuse. Chris, thank you so much for joining me, as always.
Absolute delight, James.
Always is. I'm now going to go off and I'm going to hopefully meet our fan, meet some of our fans in the next week or so. We'll be back next Monday. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for viewing. And we will see you soon.